Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Hello and good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. It's May 7th. We're very glad you joined us this morning. If you are in the Hartford area listening, hello, good morning. You know, hey, I'm going to be there Thursday, Friday. I'll be broadcasting from Walnut Hills Community Church on Thursday. So if you want to come see, I'll be signing books. I haven't written any, but bring a book. I'll sign it. Doesn't matter. This is very fun. And you can email hello@walnuthillcc.org. for information about coming and witnessing how all this happens and is done. Anyway, that's going to be Thursday, Friday of this week. And I saw over the weekend that the Kentucky Derby was happened, and a horse named Justify won in running in 2 minutes, 4.2 seconds, was able to win the big prize, which is a check for $1,432,000. I would say to the horse, how about I keep the check, I give you a carrot and some hay? And I bet I would win. I bet they'd go, yeah, just give me the carrot and the hay. That is, seems like a lot of money for a horse. But anyway, that's big business from what I'm told. And it is fun. It's probably maybe the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. Anyway, just a thought. In 1 Thessalonians 5, it says, rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances. This is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. Just chew on that today. Rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances. This is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. All right? Think about that. We'll have Colin Hansen from the Gospel Coalition and then Dr. David Aikman all in hour two of the show. So that's what's ahead. So don't go anywhere. Just get more coffee and maybe warm up a donut if you've got one left over from Thursday, because it'll still be good if it's warm. Be back in a minute. Morning and back. Welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line Colin Hansen. He's like the senior editor of the Gospel Coalition. Really cool job. Really cool guy. And recently wrote an article that is in Christianity Today, and it was an article on what Billy Graham, what he might have done differently in life. Interesting article. Interesting to discuss. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now, no question, Billy Graham has got some of the most remarkable accomplishments in Christianity, period. But he's got regrets, doesn't he?
Right. Well, I think that's what makes it so remarkable, that he has these regrets, that he's so much more successful than anybody else we've ever seen in terms of an evangelist, and yet he's honest. He's honest about his failings.
Yeah. Yeah, that's we're still learning a lot from Billy Graham, and I think since his death, there's been over a million plus hits to the website. So he's still busy evangelizing, and yet he's was able to talk about some of his regrets, and I'd love to hear what they are.
Well, let's move through a few of them. Then let's start with the family thing.
Okay,
I mean, nobody traveled more than Billy Graham traveled, and he traveled when he had young kids, mm-hmm. when he had little kids. He just didn't see him very often. His wife, Ruth, extremely just strong woman, brilliant woman, accomplished woman. And it was really taxing on her. It was really taxing on the kids. The family had a lot of challenges over the years, which is very difficult for them. And he said later on, you just don't get those years back. Mm-hmm. I lost those years with my family, and I regret that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he would have done differently, because there were so many people who were affected by his ministry that, you know, they would have suffered for him not serving them. But that was actually a characteristic of people of that generation in particular. I think the two generations since then have had a little bit of a different response. There's been a little bit less of a kind of a willingness to sacrifice family on behalf of career and ministry in particular. And yet, if you look at it across that generation of leaders, including, for example, Bob Pierce of World Vision, many of them saw their families very little. while they were traveling around the world.
Mm-hmm. And Colin, yet you know people, evangelists today that are probably carrying on similar kinds of schedules, and your heart breaks for them because they want to do God's will for their life, and they want to be effective in ministry, but that is very demanding on their time.
Yeah, very demanding on their time. Another area that was really difficult for him is for Billy Graham, and I think it's common for many evangelists today, would be study. He did an anthropology degree at Wheaton College. That was the third of different undergraduate schools that he attended and mm-hmm. where he graduated, where he met his wife, Ruth. But he really regretted that he didn't go on to pursue other study. We call him Dr. Billy Graham, but that was an honorary degree, well, mm-hmm. many honorary degrees that he received. And he said, I really would have benefited from having studied more and preached less. I think he saw that as being as something that would have really fueled his preaching with perhaps greater insight. But, you know, the amazing thing about Billy Graham is that when you look back on his sermons, when you read them especially, they don't really stand out. Like there's nothing spectacular in them. You don't think, my goodness, this man is so brilliant. You don't think, my goodness, he's so insightful, or he's just so eloquent. But I actually think that was the power, not just the simplicity, but there was a clear anointing of the Holy Spirit. We can talk again and again and again about all the different ways that Billy Graham was especially gifted. But when it comes right down to it, he was uniquely and especially blessed by God to be able to evangelize. And people responded to him in ways they didn't respond to other people who were more brilliant and had all the academic degrees. John Stott was somebody that Billy Graham, was very comparable to in many ways, and was also very successful and had that deep, learned, educated background that Billy Graham never did. But God used both of them in different ways. So it was a regret from Graham, though I would hardly say that it hindered his ministry. And in fact, Graham was extremely instrumental in founding several different institutions of learning for pastors, including Gordon Conwell Theological mm-hmm. Seminary, a friend of Fuller Theological Seminary, and the founder of Christianity Today magazine as well.
Mm-hmm. And Billy Graham was such a great evangelist, and I'm so glad and so grateful that he did what God gifted him to do. But I certainly believe and think that there are a lot of people that want to do more of something else other than what comes to them most naturally. I mean, I certainly know guys who are, you know, great writers that say, but what I really want to do is be a speaker. And I go, yeah, but your gift is in writing, and you're not that great of a speaker, you know. So, despite that he had regrets, he sure was outstanding at what God gifted him to do.
You know, and one of those other areas that he regretted was, and he was always drawn in this way, he regretted being too involved in politics.
Mm.
That's an area where I don't know if exactly he wanted to be president or if he wanted to be a senator or something like that. It never could have happened because, as his wife told him, people aren't going to vote for a divorced senator or a divorced president. Mm-hmm. To which he responded, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Light just went off.
Yeah, exactly. But he was drawn to the limelight. Whether it were music stars like Johnny Cash or Hollywood stars, he got his big start in Los Angeles, his big breakthrough in the newspapers with movie stars and music stars and things like that in Hollywood. And he was drawn to politics as well. And we know historically that it really burned him. It burned him and scarred him in ways that he, we remembered him as we celebrated his life, and you know, the main and his body was displayed in the U.S. Capitol.
Mm,
I mean,
amazing.
You can see this is a man who was very close to power. And yet it was that very proximity to political power that he identified as one of his greatest regrets, especially because he was very lacking in his discernment of how politicians were using him.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard Nixon was the prime example of that. Now, he never abandoned Richard Nixon, meaning he loved him as a friend, even as the rest of the nation had turned on him. But when those tapes came out revealing a man who Billy Graham did not know privately, which revealed that Nixon was deceiving Graham, he actually threw up. Graham was so sickened by what he'd heard, and also sickened by his own failure of discernment with somebody he regarded to be a very close friend. So, yeah, politics was the other of the really big areas where Graham had a lot of regrets. Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of the two main ones, Colin, or is there something else that Billy Graham would like to have done differently?
The education, the family,
okay,
and the politics are the three main areas that he would refer to repeatedly. But I think the main thing, you know, there was so much talk about Billy Graham as a flawed hero when he died. And I think that's because he talked about it. I mean, how many other leaders who are that successful, which is, I mean, nobody is as successful in worldly terms as Billy Graham was. And yet how many of our leaders today speak publicly so openly and so willingly about the ways that they are, about their regrets and about ways that they have fallen short. We could talk about a lot of different, you know, individual areas. One of the major controversies of his life was a visit to the Soviet Union, where he came back to the United States in the early 1980s and said, well, actually, I observed quite a bit of religious freedom there. And it seemed to have been pretty obvious that he was set up. He was given one of those, Potemkin Village tours that was not real.
Sure.
But my goodness, for somebody who was in the spotlight for 50 plus, 60 plus years, it astounds me that he has such a strong track record. I mean, look how difficult it is in our own day with so many Christian leaders continuing to fall by the way morally as we learn about their indiscretions. But also that he would have the humility to say, hey, you know, perhaps you can learn from my example. And here are some ways.
Colin, let me take a little break. When I come back, more with Colin Hanson from the Gospel Coalition. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to the show. So glad you're joining me this morning. I'm speaking to Colin Hanson, editorial director of the Gospel Coalition. Also, just a fine resource for thinking clearly through certain issues of the day. And Colin, you were just talking about Billy Graham's regret about being too close to politics. And I know you had a chance to recently talk to Jonathan Lehman about how you rethink faith and politics in such an age of dividedness.
Yeah, so Jonathan Lehman is a colleague of mine. He's a counterpart of mine at the Ministry Nine Marks. He's been an elder for many years at Capitol Hill Baptist Church in Washington, D.C. Wonderful congregation, and of course, with proximity right there to the Capitol building and to those halls of power. He has insight from many members of his congregation who are involved in congressional work in the Supreme Court, which is just a couple blocks away from their church, and also all kinds of different people whose fortunes professionally rise and fall depending on a presidential election because of all the appointments to all those federal positions there. And so when I was working on Capitol Hill, that was where I worshiped and learned a lot. And so I would strongly recommend Jonathan's new book, How the Nations Rage. And it was so just fascinating to be able to look through and to basically get an overall view of politics in an era where it doesn't seem like we get down to the first principles of why we do what we do. It just seems like people are trying to vie back and forth about what's wrong with the other side. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like people don't make decisions based on their own side, but just, well, at least I'm not like those other guys. And that's it's a very tribal instinct that unfortunately just kind of sucks Christians down into this posture of fear and loathing. And I think that's a very worldly response to what's happening. It doesn't commend the Spirit's work in our life and the gospel of Jesus Christ, but instead the Spirit, the gospel of Jesus Christ, the love of our Father and obedience to his commands actually fuels us to be able to engage, to love our neighbors as we're commanded to, and to engage the world with grace and truth, with faith and love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what Jonathan helps us to do, to think specifically, yes, about a lot of different issues, but ultimately be able to love even our enemies. cannot help but think, what would it look like if Christians in this day and age were known for loving our enemies? Not just by scoring points, by pointing out the problems in our enemies, which are legitimate. They're often legitimate. I'm not trying to say something else there, but what would it look like if we were known for faith and love in the public square?
All right, Colin, here's my $20 question with coupon. How can we encourage instead of further divide?
Well, I think one thing is to be very discerning in our media choices and to listen to shows like this one as a free plug.
Okay,
right there for you. But, you know, read resources, listen to radio programs, watch television programs that elevate the level of discourse, that guide you, that where you come away informed, you come away encouraged. It's one of the things that we try to do at the Gospel Coalition is feature a lot of stories about God's work in the world, and especially through local churches. This is the way I like to think about it. Do your media consumptions and your engagement with news and things like that, does it fill you with encouragement to be able to obey God's commands by loving your neighbors in the community of influence where God has placed you? That could be your family as a stay-at-home mom. That could be your workplace, your school, your literal neighborhood, your city. Maybe you're in a position of influence, your business, things like that. Does it fuel you to be able to obey God's commands in those contexts? Or does it fill you with loathing and fear and loathing of places and people that you do not influence and that you do not understand, and places that where you're not proximate, I guess would be the technical way to put it. Look for those people and those resources that help you to obey God's commands where you can put them into practice and not fill you with fear and loathing for people and places that you don't influence, you don't have any control over. If we do that, I think it would make a huge difference.
Colin, I want to take everything you just said and blow it up onto a huge poster board and put it in the studio so I can review that, because you absolutely nailed it.
Well, I appreciate that. It's just a long, hard fun. I mean, I'm a media creature. I work in media. I have a journalism degree. I've been working in this field for a long time. It's been hard to try to come to terms with this, but to see all that we do and all that we say as driving us toward love of neighbor and love of God. And unfortunately, that's not what a lot of media is trying to do these days. And we have to be very discerning and careful about
that. Yeah, I am definitely going to go back and listen on the podcast what you said, because I want to take notes on it, because it really is just so wise. And very inspired. So thank you so much for coming on the show and being a guest. We love Colin Hansen around this studio. So thanks for taking the time, and we'll reach out to you again soon.
Oh, thank you so much.
You bet, Colin. Have a great day. We'll take a short break and see what's next.
Do is praise your name, from the rising of the sun to the going down of the same. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name. I praise your name. And
it's half past the hour. My friend Jameson Stadema singing from Go Fish. He also happened to sing the theme song to the Early Morning Late Show. Love that guy. We'll take a break for news, and then Dr. David Aikman's with us. Twenty-six minutes until the top of the hour. We're going to speak to Dr. David Aikman in just a minute or two or three. But until then, Dr. Bruce Wilkinson is an author. He says much of the torment we experience in life is tied to our unforgiveness. Listen up as he explains.
We do not connect the torment back to unforgiveness. We just think it's there. It's not just there. That's why it's so fascinating. When the disciples said to Jesus, teach us how to pray, of all the thousands of things he could have included, isn't it amazing that he says in that short Lord's Prayer, as we forgive our debtors, that you would forgive us? And then Jesus knew that everybody was wondering about that, when as soon as the Lord's Prayer is over in Matthew, he goes on and says, listen, if you forgive others, my Father will forgive you. But, and this is a big clue to why things happen the way they do, but if you do not forgive your brother of the wounds he brings to you, neither will my Father forgive you. And that's why when unforgiveness occurs, there's legal rights for you to be tormented. Because that sin of unforgiveness, God puts a pause button on. And he will not and does not continue to forgive until you forgive. It doesn't mean you can't go to heaven. It's not that kind of forgiveness. It's the present day type of forgiveness.
If you want to hear that full interview from Dr. Wilkinson, head over to myfaithradio.com, and we've got a great search engine. It's really easy to use. It's simple. It's bold. When you type in his name, you'll get right to it, and you'll go, huh, there it is. I think I'll listen to the whole interview right now, and I'll learn all kinds of things. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
One of the great mistakes many parents make is not establishing a belief system when their kids are young. Such a system is crucial if your home is to operate effectively. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. A belief system includes a list of your convictions, a set of rules for how your family will function based on your beliefs, and consequences for breaking those rules. Such a system should provide you with a relational policy and procedure manual for your home. There's no better model, of course, than the precepts found in the Bible, and you must adopt biblical principles as your own. And if your kids are beyond adolescence, it's never too late to start. Create an atmosphere in your home where relationships can flourish.
Be on the lookout for helpful new resources from Mark Gregston, specifically designed for moms and dads. They're coming soon to ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
It is 22 minutes until the top of the hour. Agent Aikman is on our studio line, ready for duty. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Agent Aikman, reporting for duty.
I love it. There's so much to discuss, so I figured let's just start discussing Iran, just for starters. Do you think they are preparing for an attack on northern Israel?
Well, I can't predict whatever their planning is, but many Israelis have been saying that the probability is that they will try to produce some revenge attack for essentially the Israeli intelligence exposing all of their plans to build the bomb. And they're absolutely furious about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they're also furious because somebody, and the Israelis have not admitted it, the Americans have not, that somebody delivered a really explosive bomb on basically a weapons arsenal at an Iranian base in Syria that let off such a loud noise, people thought an earthquake was happening.
Wow.
So the Iranians are kind of resentful at the humiliating position that Israel has managed to put them in recent weeks.
So as this Iran deal seems to be falling apart, what is Israel's concern? Because Iran is going to be probably very stubborn. I know this deal was built on lies from what Israel has discovered. What do you see happening in this area?
Well, the question really remains, what will President Trump do on May 12th or 13th or 14th, because he has to decide whether or not the United States will continue to be in that five-nation agreement with Iran that gave them the sort of start-off of relief from sanctions because it was thought that their nuclear program was going to come under international control, or at least international inspection. So the Israelis seem to be fearing that either before Trump makes a decision or perhaps afterwards, if in fact he does withdraw from the agreement, then there will be all kinds of problems coming up. And the Israelis suspect that the Iranians might try to take some kind of initiative which would make life very difficult for the Israelis who are overseeing what the Iranians are doing within Syria.
Mm-hmm. Now, David, I know President Trump has ordered the Pentagon to start reducing the number of U.S. troops in South Korea. And there's been discussion now of prisoner release and other things going on in regards to North Korea. I don't know when that meeting is scheduled. Is it coming up in the next week, the possible meeting with
the... you mean the Trump-Kim meeting?
Yes, that one.
No, I think the Trump-Kim meeting is basically scheduled for sometime in the middle of June at this point.
Oh, okay, okay.
So it won't happen till then. And, of course, because the three Americans who were held in captivity in North Korea have apparently been taken to a hotel near Pyongyang, that has aroused speculation that they may, in fact, be about to be released. And, of course, it's quite probable that the North Koreans, if they are, in fact, about to release them, got a quid pro quo from the U.S. to reduce the number of troops it had in South Korea. I just don't know whether that's true or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly possible.
Yeah. David, what do you think of the job National Security Advisor John Bolton has been doing so far in these negotiations?
Well, I've always been a great admirer of John Bolton. I think he's been a very articulate, person to explain what the parameters of American power are, what the Americans need to keep themselves secure. And I think he has a long-range view of strategic forces within the world that make his judgment pretty sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what role he had in the latest North Korean stuff, but obviously I think he has probably got a major input into what President Trump's decision will be on whether to renew American participation in the five-power agreement with Iran. So mm-hmm. we'll have to see whether that turns out to be the case.
Yeah. David, I was reading this story about the Chinese military using lasers in Djibouti against American military pilots. Would you further explain that for me?
Well, it does seem that, at least this is what the American pilots were reporting, that when they were flying over areas of Djibouti, not far from where Chinese military assets were based, that somebody shot, I guess you don't shoot a laser, but you point a laser mm-hmm. at an airplane, and that can seriously damage the eyes of anybody in the airplane
mm-hmm.
who is hit by this laser without any kind of protection. And that's a very, very serious thing to do internationally. And a lot of lasers have been pointed at American civilian aircraft pilots, even around places like JFK Airport.
Wow.
And it's very, very dangerous, and the authorities, take great, very energetic measures to try and track down where these lasers are coming from. Because if you blinded a pilot at a crucial point of his approach to an airport,
mm-hmm.
you could seriously disable and cause the whole plane to crash. And, American pilots who have been lasered by Chinese in Djibouti or anywhere else are obviously at great risk, and they were trying to get to the bottom of that.
Mm-hmm. That's scary stuff. Very dangerous, for sure. David, let me take a short break. When I come back, I've got lots more questions for you. Speaking to Dr. David Aikman, it's 15 minutes till the top of the hour. 12 minutes until the top of the hour. My guest is Dr. David Aikman, my foreign affairs correspondent. He lives in Bray, Ireland, and former New York Times author, best-selling author, New York Times correspondent. Time Magazine correspondent. I'm getting my details a little confused this morning, but I love David. So anyway, David, there was a news that China had installed cruise missiles in the South Sea, in the South China Sea. What will you anticipate the U.S. response be to that?
Well, that's a very serious development. I mean, essentially, there are two reefs in the Spratly Islands, which is a group of islands claimed by the Philippines, but also claimed by China, on which the Chinese have built sort of makeshift landing strips and military bases for aircraft. So they're in a position to mount anti-surface or anti-aircraft missiles on those two militarized fragments of coral reef. And that sets at risk any naval or even ordinary maritime shipping traffic through the area in a serious way. So I don't know. I mean, basically, the Chinese Navy has challenged any foreign Navy ship moving through the area, including recently the Australians. And the Australians basically flashed a signal back to the Chinese ships that challenged them, saying, listen, we are in international waters. This is not internationally recognized as Chinese territory, so we're going to continue. And I think the Americans would probably do the same thing. But you have to worry whether at some point, perhaps a nervous Chinese missile operator may take that refusal to accept a demand to stop traveling through as the trigger for a missile attack on a foreign ship, which could be an American warship. Mm-hmm. That would be very serious.
Wow. Yeah, no kidding. David, let me ask you about the local elections and what appears to be a divided Britain. What is going on there?
Well, yes, it's very interesting. What they had was the council elections. These are for council seats in the major cities and provincial towns throughout Britain. And nobody really secured a huge victory. The Labour Party managed to gain one particular council that it had not had previously, namely in Plymouth. But on the other hand, the interesting thing was that the Labour Party lost several seats in parts of London, particularly the area of Barnet, where large numbers of Jews reside. And this was taken as evidence that Jeremy Corbyn's attempt to tamp down the anti-Semitic quality of his Labour Party has not been well received by the Jews, and basically, many Jews simply don't trust him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not really in a very good position if a general election came up imminently to contend for the highest office in the land.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Before I let you go, David, I kind of want to drift back to our conversation we started earlier about the meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. There's been a report that the North Korea has said that the U.S. is ruining the mood of this meeting. And I don't know if you had heard it, that and what that is. Is that a head game, or do you have any knowledge of what that's about?
Well, I think it's maneuvering for sort of propaganda advantage before the meeting takes place. I mean, if people are reporting that the North Koreans are about to release three Americans, and this is proof that Trump's policy of being tough on North Koreans has been effective, certainly the North Koreans are not going to be very happy at that kind of reporting. So I think it's a lot of maneuvering around the edges. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to detract from whatever happens at the meeting. And I certainly hope that President Trump and John Bolton, his national security advisor, have thought through every possibility that could come up at the summit in order to make sure that nothing goes awry.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm curious, David, what do you think of President Trump replacing his legal counsel, Ty Cobb, with Rudy Giuliani?
My goodness. asking me to reflect on President Trump's internal administration operations is something that is pretty hard to do from Washington, D.C.
Oh, I would agree.
From Bray in Ireland. But mm-hmm. it looks to me as though he's really trying to distance himself from anybody recently in or close to his administration who could be subpoenaed by Mueller, the investigative chief of the search for evidence of collusion with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I just think President Trump simply wants to distance himself as far as possible from whoever might be liable to a subpoena.
Yeah.
By the prosecutors.
Yeah. David, thank you so much for being on my show. I don't know how I would do it without you. I appreciate all your thoughtful analysis and the way you can look at a situation and make it easy for us to understand. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Paul, for having me.
You bet. All righty. Dr. David Aikman has been my guest. We'll take a short break and wrap up the show.
Faith Radio is a listener-supported ministry. We exist to lead people to Christ and nurture believers in their faith through Christ-centered media. And we can't do it without you on our team. Become a member of the Faith Radio support team today at myfaithradio.com and click on the Donate tab. Want to sponsor a day of on-air ministry? Become a day sponsor. When you do, we'll share your message honoring a loved one or celebrating a milestone on the air. Find out more at myfaithradio.com.
Hey, thanks to Dr. David Aikman. What a gift he is, even though if he sometimes confuses me for Paul, who gets him on the phone. Yeah, you know what? He's an amazing guy. Really appreciate him. Colin Hanson, what a great thinker he is. He's from the Gospel Coalition. If you go to gospelcoalition.org, you can see some of his writing. And he is a thoughtful guy and just really enjoy having him on the show. Well, as you get your week started, be reminded that just a little progress each day, you know, will add up to big results at the end. So just keep taking little steps. And if you did not get any quiet time this morning, well, let me just remind you, now is a good time to do it. Just get alone with the Lord, even in your heart, just for 5 minutes. Let him know that his will be done, not yours, and that you can always commit your day to him. And that's the best place to be, is just in his hands and in the sovereignty of him. I want to thank also Patrick Albanese, Dr. Adam Carrington. What a great show we've had today. And thanks for supporting Faith Radio. I'm going to be in Hartford on Thursday and Friday broadcasting. I'm going to be at Walnut Hills Community Church. If you want to come witness that, you can email hello@walnutcc.org. And that can get you information as to where it's going to be. And you can come say hi and be looking forward to meeting our friends in the Hartford area. So we haven't been broadcasting there for too long, so I'm anxious to see some smiling faces and get to know some listeners and some friends of the show. So that's all for today. I'm looking forward to being here with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, and God bless you throughout your day. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.